Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and joining me in studio right now is Jacob Northey. Jacob is a local entrepreneur, and every now and then on this show, we like to profile people that kind of are local movers and shakers, whether they're business people or artists or authors, and so we thought we'd do that kind of a show right here as we're kicking off the new year. And if you're hearing a feed through your radio dial right now, your radio's not broken, we're having a issue with a speaker here in the studio. So you might hear some 99.3 to lift feed going on. We'll just call it background music for this interview for right now. But, well, let me go ahead and now introduce Jacob. Jacob, it's good to have you on the program.
Yeah, thank you, Rick, for inviting me down here.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to know you a little bit. So let's first start. Are you born and bred in the area, or did you come from outside?
No, so I'm kind of a transplant. I'm not a native Youper, but I've certainly, once I moved up here, I fell in love with the area. Grew up in Indiana and actually moved up and went to Houghton High School. Moved here in 1996, so.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I don't know what the time frame is before you can start calling yourself, you know, a local. It's longer than 7 years, which is how long I've been up here. I know that. But when you've reached 22, I think you're probably doing pretty good there. You graduated from Houghton High School, and am I remembering correctly? Did you go to Michigan Tech?
Went to Michigan Tech right after. Yep.
Okay. What'd you study there?
So I studied computer science and bioinformatics and got my bachelor's in both of those before going out into industry.
Bioinformatics,
yeah. So the Human Genome Project was kind of a big thing at the time, and I was kind of inspired and wanted to apply my computing knowledge to a specific field, and I thought biology was going to be my calling. It turns out it wasn't, but it was very interesting studying at Michigan Tech and learning, and they have a great program there in bioinformatics and... Yeah,
that was nice. Yeah, when my daughter was in the process of getting into Michigan Tech, she's attending there now, and one of the things that was suggested to her, because she wanted to minor in computer science and major in biology at the time, and so they were like, well, you should go into bioinformatics, because that was combining both of those, and she kind of quickly figured out she didn't want to be sitting and writing all that code all the time, and she rather worked with live animals, and so now she's transitioned over to wildlife ecology. But so she won't make as much money, because I was told that the bioinformatics is like one of the top paying careers. So if you ever find yourself short of money, you might regret that decision.
I might have to go back there at some point. We'll see.
But you end up eventually, you know, focusing on developing apps, and this is a passion for you that you had for some time?
Yeah, so, I've developed all types of software products, from like web apps to, actual desktop products, I've gotten just recently really into the mobile app development. In the past, I've developed software products for specific industries like financial industries and enterprise software, and I found that, I've never actually built consumer products for the average person they can download through the App Store. And so that's something I've just recently got into, and it's been very exciting. It's basically a whole new ball game for me. I'm learning a lot and trying to apply that to the apps that we're building.
Your real world experience, where you're working, where did you get that?
So when I graduated from Michigan Tech, I went to a consulting firm based in Chicago called ThoughtWorks. And ThoughtWorks was a software consultancy where you build custom apps for all sorts of, Fortune 500 companies, and you travel a lot and visit their offices and work in their offices. And so that was really where I was kind of forged through being able to work with a lot of, very senior people in our industry. And I learned a lot from them just in terms of computing and how to build software. And so I used that actually to kind of build my entrepreneur career. I knew software well, and I wanted to kind of build software, custom software and products. And so I started actually a company, LaSalle Tech, with my father, Jim Northey, whose background was in software and financial technology. So it was natural for us to kind of go into the financial industry and use his contacts to build LaSalle Tech here in Houghton and Hancock.
Yeah, well, sure. As great as it was, I'm sure living outside of the Chicago area, designing apps so somebody else could make a lot of money off of them.
Yeah, that's usually how it went. And once you kind of peeled behind the curtains, you're like, maybe I can do this myself, right? And so I've always had kind of that entrepreneurial fire and really kind of want to do things my own way. And part of being an entrepreneur is you think you can do it better, and you have the passion to do lots of different things. And so I found that early on, and I realized that after a couple of years in industry, you know, I wanted to see if I could do it. And I figured, you know, if it didn't work out, the industry is always waiting there for you if you want to go back. So
sure. Is there any intellectual property out there, apps or that people may know of that, you know, you've had a part in?
So all the stuff that I worked in the past has been really niche, very specific financial technology software. So the normal person is not going to encounter any of that stuff.
So no Candy Crush.
Yeah, no Candy Crush. It's more, you know, stuff for big exchanges like the Chicago Board Options Exchange, was one of our big clients. And so, you know, you've probably interacted with the companies that we worked for, but not with the specific products that we built for them. So.
Well, starting a business is difficult in just, you know, in a normal environment. Why did you choose to come back here and start it here when, you know, maybe the natural choice might have been to stay outside of Chicago or another area like that where you have more support?
Yes, it certainly would have been a little bit easier to be in Chicago since a lot of our clients were in Chicago and New York and travel's a little bit easier. In fact, we made it extra hard on ourselves. So we really started into 2006 and started building products actually in 2008. And everybody knows what happened to the financial industry in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
And so we had that combined with, you know, being remote. It was extra set of challenges, but we used it more of a, we wanted to be here. We wanted to build something here. And, you know, you wouldn't want to use the company as a way to kind of move back. You know, if you're able to create a job for yourself, you can technically you can go anywhere as long as you can make it work. But that was kind of the whole idea. Is I wanted to raise a family here with my wife, and this was kind of a bridge to get back to the area. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about the company so people have an idea. What is the name of it first?
So Geom is the new company we're starting. It's a mobile app, and Geom is essentially a way to communicate to people around you around topics that you care about. And so it's a social media app. It's similar to things that other people have seen, but it's really focused on your community and things that are important to the community in general. And so with Geom is essentially an analogy for a community in general. You're really posting stuff that you think is going to help the community, you know, or having a discussion that you might benefit the community. This might be, we're trying to put a ski race together. Who can help out with this? Or there's something going on with Copper Dog this weekend. Can you guys come and help us out with that?
When you and I first met, you had an office over at the Judulis Center. And are you still located there?
No. So LaSalle Tech, a former company, was in Judulis Center. We actually moved out into the downtown Hancock area. So part of leaving LaSalle Tech was we ended up creating a co-working space. So 101 Quincy Co-working, some people may have heard of it.
Yeah.
Right on the corner there in Hancock, right across from La Cantina. And so before really building the next company, we built a space for the next company to be in. That's the co-working space.
Explain a little further. What's your involvement with that? Because we featured 101 Quincy on the show before and also on the news. I didn't know you had any involvement with it.
Yeah, so Lynn Mackla and I guess just to kind of back up, when I left LaSalle Tech, I was essentially just working out of a coffee shop on the next big idea, which was Geom. And the coffee shop, of course, was Casey Bonkers. And there's a lot of cool things happening in and around there. And one of the happenstances that came out of working there every day was I met Lynn Mackle, who had recently moved back to the area with her husband, Jason, who was working at Orbion. So, you know, she had been working remotely for the company that she had been working for in Seattle, and she was able to work remotely, but wanted kind of a different environment and wanted to have a place that she could work in. And she had an experience of working in co-working spaces out in Seattle, and we thought, well, why can't our area have a co-working space? And so that was kind of the first step, was actually to build a co-working space. And, you know, the co-working space has served two purposes. One, it's been a great place, you know, to work. When you're starting out as an entrepreneur, a lot of times it's a lonely journey by yourself until you can build up some momentum. And so we got the community of people in the co-working space, but then also we've been able to use Geom in the co-working space and being able to test it out, and people using it in the co-working space has been very beneficial because they can give me feedback immediately. If somebody says, oh, you know, something's not working, I can immediately jump on and fix it because they're using the app and they're able to give me that feedback immediately.
All right, let's talk about the genesis of GEOM, because we go back a few years and you were developing an app called Gather.
Yes.
And, you know, so tell me what happened with that.
So Gather, well, it turns out somebody else, I shouldn't say somebody else, a lot of people have created apps called Gather. So it was hard to differentiate. And then, unfortunately, one app did a lot of really bad things, and it was called Gather. And so it was hard to kind of break through that news barrier of all the bad stuff they've done with the name Gather. So we had need a new name, and GEOM was the name. And so when we looked at coming up with a new name, we thought, well, we need something that's not even a name. It's got to be something unique. And so GEOM was kind of a combination of geography and like biome or home. So it's, okay. It's essentially like a new word that we created that means community. And so Gather I had been working on while I was at LaSalle Tech on the side. It was kind of like a fun project to learn new technologies and explore some ideas about how I think people can communicate in communities better. And earlier this year, when I left LaSalle Tech, I actually started working on GEOM full time. And the name actually GEOM, we just recently came up with in October. So this is a brand new name, but it's really the same concept that we've been working on.
Spell GEOM for me.
So GEOM is GEOME.
Okay, so I had the right spelling. I was sorry if you had the H in there for that G home or not.
Yeah, so. No, it's and so I guess you know, somebody looking at it might say GEOME, but it's really GEOM. And you know, looking at the bioinformatics background, I think genome is another thing that people can actually. I think Apple still autocorrects when I say GEOM, it autocorrects it to genome.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
but
Well, what were the other lessons that you learned from the development of Gather besides having to change the name that you took to, you know, over into this new app?
Yeah, well, we've learned a lot. So through this process of we've been doing a beta for the past year, and even before that, we were working on Gather. And one of the things we learned is that, you know, with local news, we're trying to build basically a user-generated content local news platform with Gather. And so what we found is that it's hard for people to sit down and create good news. And so we do have good institutions like newspapers and radio stations and, you know, TV stations, which actually go out and get news. And the whole premise behind Gather was that, well, they're great institutions, but there's always, you know, bits and pieces here and there that they, you know, they just can't get through in a normal news cycle, right? And there's a lot of little things that are not captured through that process. And so Gather was to capture that. And what we learned is, actually, you know, nobody really wants to sit down and write news every day as a general consumer or producer. A few people do it, but...
I do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do it,
but... That's because somebody pays me to do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's part of your career, but for the, you know, typical person sitting at home, they're not going to sit down and talk about, you know, an event that just happened. Like the high school, they're not going to give a synopsis of the high school basketball game, right? They might post some pictures or something like that. But what we did find is that a lot of news is shared basically through question and answer. A discussion of, hey, you know, what is this thing? And somebody... that knows will come in and answer that. You know, the person who knows isn't going to just type up what they know all the time. But there's this kind of back and forth of somebody who isn't well informed and somebody who is informed, and that's how news is actually captured in a general user-to-user way. And so with GEOM, we've switched over to being more discussion-based and allowing that, facilitating that conversation to bring out the information that's within a community.
Okay. Who would be the connoisseur? Who would be the user for an app like this?
Well, so there's different types of users, but you know, a general user might be somebody who wants to know what's going on in the local community, and they might go on to GEOM and see, you know, there's something from the QAnon report posted there. There's something that a specific organization had posted, you know, essentially a picture of the poster that they hang up in all the storefronts. It's a way to get informed and quickly get informed about what's going on in the community right now. Or this week, but there's other people that like local retailers. They might want to say, "Hey, you know, we're having a sale." A local dining might have a deal for the week or the day that they want to get out there. And GEOM provides a way to kind of quickly get that information out to the entire community without, you know, having filters or wondering who's seeing the message, or having to build followers like other social media requires you to do. The idea is that you can just quickly and easily communicate to the right people in your community, where the only filter for GEOM is location. You know, if I'm sitting here in this radio studio, I'm going to see everything in Houghton, probably everything in Hancock. But if I'm sitting up in Cafe Rosetta in Calumet, you know, I'm going to see, you know, things that are going on in Calumet, Copper Dog, you know, anything at the Armory, anything at the Coliseum. So that's the real, really the only filter on Geom is your location, not necessarily who you're connected to or things like that.
Are you able to select, you know, what or filter yourself what you want to receive?
Yep, you can subscribe to different geomes, we call them. So a geome is a specific topic that you can follow. You can subscribe to that. And so let's say you subscribe to hockey. You might be subscribing to hockey, but essentially you're also subscribing to anybody else who's posting under hockey. This could be Michigan Tech hockey, Houghton hockey. It could be the local CCGHA. It could be, you know, the Calumet Hockey Association. You could essentially have a collection of all of the things that are going on hockey just by subscribing to hockey. So that's a way to kind of to focus in and filter what you actually want to see in your community. You know, if you're somebody who's interested in hockey, you're going to want to see all the hockey stuff. If you're not interested in hockey, you know, you might ignore or block hockey and just say, you know, show me all the cross country skiing, show me all the outdoor adventure type stuff.
How would this differentiate between some of the more well-known names when it comes to social media? You know, you alluded to Facebook, but then there's also Twitter and there's Tumblr and there's other, you know, that have some of the similar features that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think the main differentiator here is that there's not a lot of friction. So, you know, if you're a retail business that's trying to get off the ground, you know, the current playbook is create a Facebook and Twitter account and Instagram account and try to do everything you can to get more and more followers and build up your follower base. And that follower base is essentially your marketing channel. That's who you can talk to. And so with Geom, we're trying to completely change that whole playbook and say, create a space on Geom and start telling us what you're doing. And your followers are essentially everybody around you. And if they don't like what you're posting, well, they can block you or somehow otherwise filter you out, or the community can say, hey, you know, you're being a little spammy. Stop posting so much. So the idea is that if somebody's doing something interesting to the community, there is no mountain to climb. There's no, you know, you have to get to 1,000 followers to really be able to get your message out there. It's whoever's around you is going to get that message.
Well, some of the practical applications that I can kind of see just hearing from how you've described it is oftentimes there'll be a show or, you know, some sort of special going on that, you know, what's the first thing that, you know, we hear when it happens that people didn't know about it? Well, I didn't hear about that. It's like, well, it was in the paper, it was on the radio, it was on our online, it was on Facebook, you know, so, well, you know, here, you know, if you have this app, then if something's happening in your general area, it comes to you.
Exactly, exactly. And this might be something that the QAnon Report has reported on, you know, the Victorian Christmas, for instance.
Yeah.
The QAnon Report might write the article, but somebody's like, oh, we should share that with Geom to people in Houghton because, you know, they should come down and see this. And so it's just another channel. It's just another step to get it out to more people. And the idea is that since it's location-based, you're only getting information that's going to be relevant to you. And it's going to be more relevant to you than maybe, you know, if my friend in India posts something that's going on local to him. Well, you know, that's not as relevant to me, but Geom is only local stuff. So it's your way to figure out what's going on in my area right now and this week, you know.
And when you're talking about user uploaded content for something like sharing what's happening, you know, in a way sort of news based. Not that I want to put myself out of a job, but when you're mentioning Victorian Christmas, well, I came through town Victorian Christmas. I was in town shopping. I didn't have a lot of time to stop and enjoy a lot of the things that were going on. I didn't get to go to the tree lighting, and I didn't get to go to the Carnegie Museum, and I would have liked to have known how that went, you know, and. It was also happened to be the same day that Michigan Tech had their mid-year commencement. So our reporter was there doing his work and then did not come to Victorian Christmas because he had already done his work for the day, and understand that, certainly. But I would have loved to have, you know, heard, you know, somebody else's firsthand account of, you know, this is what it was like to take that horse-drawn wagon ride along the waterfront and then catch the lighting of the Christmas tree, and including a couple of pictures there. That's for the whole community, not just for their friends on Facebook.
Right, exactly. And that's something that anybody can capture and upload. If you're at the event, you're somewhere, just post it. But then also from the news angle, you know, if your reporter's got to be somewhere else, maybe you can use the content that somebody's actually captured and say, well, you know, here's actually what happened at Victorian Christmas. So it's a two-directional channel. You know, the news agencies can post to Geom, and then Geom maybe can provide additional content captured from, you know, just the general community that the news organization can then push out to their channels, right?
So. Yeah, and there are a number of even local, we'll call them, say, amateur, you know, news reporters, and I only use the word amateur, and that somebody's probably not paying them to do it. Not that they have, you know, a lesser skill set. There's some of them are very, very talented and right. get a tremendous amount of information, good information, reliable information. And it would give them, I guess, maybe a platform to also get out their message, since they seem to, you know, enjoy doing it. And as anybody would tell you, we know all how we can get over here to cover all the news. But something like this has got some obstacles you've got to overcome. What are some of those that you're looking at?
Well, the main obstacle, obviously, with any platform like this is adoption. You know, the more people that use it, the more value it provides to people. And so right now we've gone through some beta testing, and we're you know, ironing out the kinks. And so once we get through that, the next challenge will just be getting people to use it and tell their friends about it and get other people to download it. And then through that process, it's just getting the content. You know, we want to make sure that every Victorian Christmas is on Geom. Every little event that, no matter how small, maybe just a small musical gathering, gets on Geom so people know what's going on. So the first step is really getting enough people there, but then also getting all of the information that's going to be relevant to a community and getting people to provide that.
Are you at the point you're beta testing now?
We're still beta testing, but today we're growing the beta test to a bigger audience. So our beta test has mostly been focused around 101 Quincy, doing some internal testing there and a few other small local organizations. And now we're going to grow it. We've gotten to the point where we feel like, okay, now we're ready for a bigger audience. And so we're having actually a launch party tonight. This will air in the future, but tonight, December 19th, we're going to have a launch party at 101 Quincy, and we'll have some people there to kind of grow it to the next level. And then we're going to start focusing on specific, what we call sub-geomes, which would be like the Nordic skiing or dog sledding or hockey. We're going to focus on things that are kind of relevant to the time of year and are specific sub-communities that we think can get a lot of value out of using something like Geom.
So Geom, the primary, is that the only app that your company is currently working on? You got to pour all of your effort into the one?
Yeah, certainly. When I was at LaSalle Tech, we had 7 products and like 5 developers, and that was a lot of work. But with Geom, we're focusing on this one problem and trying to go really as deep as we can to provide the best possible solution we can for this specific problem and for our community. And I think, you know, fortunately, where we're at is in a community that provides us a lot of good information. Everything's really close together. It's easy to kind of just walk in and talk to somebody. And that's providing a lot of good feedback on how to solve this problem. Because to be honest, there's actually been hundreds of apps that have tried to solve this problem and they've fallen short. And I don't think it's because there is no solution. I think it's because the solution is hard. Like you said, there are many challenges to solving a problem like this.
An app like this, do you see it being, you know, having more success in smaller communities as opposed to Chicago, when there would literally be thousands of things going on?
No, I think it works in big and small communities, and that's something we're gonna have to find out as we go along. I think the nice thing about starting in a small community is that there's enough going on where you can get people involved and capture it. And starting specifically in the Keweenaw, what I like starting out in the Keweenaw is we could start in a medium-sized city like Green Bay, and Green Bay would be the community. But in the Keweenaw, we have hundreds of communities in this one community, and they're all really small communities. You know, we got the small fishing towns, or the small vacation towns, or the small, you know, mining towns, and they all have their own unique flavor from their cultural history. So if you look at places like Calumet, you know, Calumet's got a very strong identity that's completely separate from Hancock, which is completely separate from Houghton. And yet we're all very closely packed in here. And so, you know, you might be able to eventually get a big enough community in somewhere like Eagle Harbor for the summer, where there's people communicating about stuff going on specifically in Eagle Harbor, whereas you would never create an Eagle Harbor newspaper, right? Or something like that. It's just, it would be, maybe there is one. I don't know. There used to be.
That's the thing. But yeah, but of course, it's, you know, there's not, you know, not many newspapers around anymore, especially now with the internet providing a lot of that kind of information. But no, that I think that what you're saying there is, it's appropriate, and that there is, you know, when you there's news that happens in smaller communities that's not big enough to, you know, to get on air or get into a, you know, a print newspaper or on television, but things that happen that local people would, you know, want to know, and there's not a lot of avenues for those things, you know, for, you know, say smaller news events that happen in a neighborhood.
Right, exactly. And currently, you know, the game plan, again, is create a group and try to get followers. And for us, it's we want you to create a geom, and the geom will already be available to the people in your area. And so there's less friction between creating something and getting people to know about that thing that you've created.
Right. Jacob Northey's been my guest this segment. His product, his app is called Geom, and so I expect you'll be hearing big things as time goes on about that. And if you want to know more, stop by, see the folks at 101 Quincy. I'm sure they'll be happy to talk to you and get you involved if you want to be in that beta testing coming up. And should be fun if you could be. Jacob, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate it.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.